Doctor, he's supposed to be late.
Yeah, I'm always waiting for doctors.
Good afternoon. I will open the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness. It is Tuesday, May 12th. Good afternoon. Welcome to the students who are with us today. And we're going to go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 224. You want to give us a quick description of the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 224 exempts the Oregon Health Authority and the Department of Human Services from certain provisions relating to acquiring, holding, or disposing of real property or equitable interests in real property or in mineral or geothermal resource rights. The measure has an emergency clause, and so it would take effect upon passage, but the provisions become operative on January 1st, 2016. There's no amendments to the bill. There's no revenue impact, only a minimal fiscal impact, and the Senate vote was 22-8. The vote, if anybody is interested, is listed on the staff measure summary on the Senate side.
Thank you very much. Go ahead and introduce yourself and proceed.
Hello, my name's Rick Mills. I'm a policy analyst for the Office of Payment Accuracy and Recovery, Department of Human Services. Our estate recovery program, which is required to seek reimbursement from the estates of deceased individuals that receive certain types of public benefits, acquires title to residential real property two or three times a year. And this bill is just simply an effort to try to streamline the process for us when we sell that real property by giving us the same exemptions that Department of Veterans Affairs and Housing and Community Services Department have for their respective home loan programs. It's just an effort to try to speed it up and try to reduce some of the operating costs associated with selling real property. I'll be happy to try to answer any questions you may have.
Questions? Yes, Representative Rayfield.
I noticed on the Senate floor there were 8 no votes. Why did people vote no?
Well, I only can speak for Senator Boquist, who filed an explanation of his vote. And in his explanation of vote, he stated that he was concerned that it hadn't been vetted to determine how it might affect veterans. And in all due respect to Senator Boquist, I don't see any way that this bill will have any sort of disparate or direct effect on veterans, because all it does is it exempts us from having to go through a review and approval process by Department of Administrative Services, Department of State Lands, and possibly the Oregon Land Board when we're selling real property that we have title to.
Other questions? Okay, seeing none. Any last parting words?
No. Thank you for considering our bill. I hope you support us.
All right.
Go team.
All right. Look at that. Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard on Senate Bill 224? Okay, seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 224. Yes?
Oh, I just wanted to say hi to Libby and Piper in the audience.
Okay.
Sorry, Madam Chair, if I may explain.
Oh, okay.
So my daughter, Libby, was an honorary PhD on the House floor.
How embarrassing.
And so was her friend Piper. And then our three other honorary PhDs were from Ogden Middle School in Oregon City.
Yeah. And I had permission to try to embarrass him.
Oh, I think mission accomplished, right?
So I think
well
for
played.
The committee to note that my father is actually your band instructor for. Okay, what instruments do you guys play?
We're both in pit.
Okay, pit. All right, so you did the marching band program then. Okay, how did you guys do this year?
Yeah.
Hey, that's good.
That's what my dad said.
It's only getting better.
That's what my dad said. So we're in good shape.
Very good.
I'm just confirming that was accurate.
Sorry, Madam Chair.
Out of order. Just kidding. Welcome. Okay, so with that, I'm going to open. I have not heard from Representative Nierman. Are we expecting him to come today? Does anybody know? Okay, well, I think we'll go ahead and have the work session on 278A, and then somebody can make a motion when he comes to reopen. So with that, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 278A. Do you want to give us a reminder of that?
Oh, sure, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 278A, we heard this bill last week. It voids payday loans, title loans, and consumer finance loans of $50,000 or less if, at the time the loan in question is made, the person making the loan was not licensed to issue the loan. It prohibits unlicensed persons or their successors, assignees, or affiliates from collecting, receiving, or retaining principal, interest, fees, or charges related to or in connection with payday loans, title loans, or consumer
microfinance loans of $50,000 or less. It becomes operative on the 91st day after its effective date and declares emergency and would become effective upon passage and signature by the governor. There's no fiscal revenue impact, and the measure has no amendments before it, so the bill would go to the floor should the committee take action.
Thank you. And if you recall, I don't believe there was no testimony in opposition either. So is there any... first let me entertain a motion on it, and then that can be during discussion, Representative Buehler.
Sure. So, Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 278A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rehfield has moved Senate Bill 278A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, Representative Buehler.
Actually, Representative Stark brought this really good point up to me after we heard this bill last time. I just want to make sure this wouldn't restrict loans between family and friends.
Rick, do you want to come up? And Paul, I don't know if you had a comment, or probably not relating to your client.
So for the record, I'm Rick Blackwell with the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities within DCBS. So if I understand the question correctly, was whether or not, based on the fact pattern that was brought up last week, whether this bill would prohibit friends and family from lending to each other. My understanding is that what was at issue was more of around mortgage lending. This is really about whether you're in the business of making certain types of loans. The mortgage lending statutes, which are in Chapter 86A, do have an exemption for friends and family. This is for whether you're a mortgage loan originator, so someone that takes an application or negotiates the terms of a loan. So totally different bills. I mean, they are related in the sense that they're about money, but...
To answer your question, you want to follow up?
So if I wanted to loan Representative Stark $49,000 for a down payment on a piece of property, would I be able to do that without a license?
Chair Fagan and Representative or Vice Chair Buehler, I would say that under, as a business, if you're not holding yourself out as making those loans habitually, then you're most likely not in the business under 725A, and so probably wouldn't apply to you.
But we don't know for sure.
Well, yeah, Chair Fagan, Vice Chair Buehler, every fact pattern is going to be different. But generally speaking, business is being habitual or repeated activities.
Representative Rehfield.
And so I think maybe just to clarify the intent, so that way it is not intended as drafted to include, you know, kind of the casual or friend-to-friend loans. And so that's the intent of the legislation. Is that correct?
Chair Fagan, Vice Chair Rehfield, that's correct. I mean, the point of this is to target offshore businesses. They're habitually and repeatedly making loans across state lines, across international borders to Oregonians.
And then the other thing I just want to follow up, just to clarify for the legislative intent on this, that as drafted, my understanding from our last hearing is that this bill is intended to eliminate all equitable remedies for the, I guess, would-be defendant in a lender in a case like this.
Chair Fagan, Representative Rehfield, to the extent that's a statutory bar to making the loan without a license, my presumption would be yes.
Further discussion? Representative Stark.
Thank you, Chair. I asked this the other day, and I apologize. I forgot to write down the answer.
Okay.
Is this retroactive or only new loans going forward?
Chair Fagan and Representative Stark, my understanding with all legislation is that if it's going to be retroactive, it has to clearly say so in the bill, or otherwise it's all prospective. So, yeah.
That would likely also face a constitutional issue under Article 11, probably impairing the obligation of contracts. So probably... we'll definitely, for the record, say that it's not intended to be retroactive, but I think the Constitution keeps it from being retroactive anyway.
Yeah, sure thing. I certainly wouldn't want to do that.
So. Representative McLean.
Well, and also a lot of the presentation last time was on the fact that these folks were online and they were advertising and making the connections in that way and being offshore and giving fees that, you know, were not necessarily what the person had read the first time. I mean, there was a little bit of... I'm not going to say non-clear contract, you know, rules, but wasn't there a little bit of that going on, too, that this was going to cover?
Chair Fagan and Representative McLean, the purpose of the bill was that folks that were unlicensed were offering loans at terms that were far and away above what Oregon licensed lenders were,
right.
were giving,
okay.
yes.
Okay, thanks.
Section 3 here is where it is. So.
Representative Stewart? She's focused. I'll wait. She's the chair.
Go ahead, Representative.
All right, thank you. I'm actually, after your, my last question, I'm looking at Section 3, Line 9. Line 8 and 9, where it actually says payday loans and title loans that a person makes before. So it applies to consumer finance loans, payday loans, and title loans that a person makes before, on, and after the operative date. And so it seems like it specifically spells out that this would apply to loans that have already been made.
I was just looking at the same language.
What line are you on?
We're on page 3, line 7. Well, technically line 8, but starting the sentence starts in line 7.
Sorry, my apologies. I'm just making sure I pull up the bill. Before on. Chair Fagan and Representative Stark, I suppose, yeah, I guess as far as the text goes, this would apply before. If the committee does not want this to apply retroactively, I'm certain we would ask for an amendment for that, sure.
Do you want to withdraw your motion?
Unless you want me to.
Well, otherwise I think it's going to come off. Let's stand at ease for a moment.
Yeah.
Whatever you want.
I'm just saying,
do
you see
the language? I'll
show you. It's Section 3. You were reading Section 4. Read the section before that. Okay, so we're back. And Representative Rayfield?
So I will withdraw my motion.
Representative Rayfield has withdrawn his motion. Is there any objection? No, he just withdraws it. Okay.
Is there any objection?
Is there any objection? Seeing none. And with that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 278A. And I know, Paul, you were concerned about amendments to this bill. So are you fine with an amendment to just change it to be loans going forward? Okay. No problem. Go to see my staff if you need a note.
Please. After this. Sure. Thank you.
So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 675A. Give us a brief description.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 675A eliminates the requirement that bidders and proposers for public contracts to a local contracting agency demonstrate responsibility by submitting signed affidavit that attests the bidder or proposer complied with tax laws of the state. It requires a bidder or proposer instead to attest to being current on state taxes. It would become operative on the 91st day following the effective date of the act and declares an emergency, so it'd be effective upon signature by the governor. It has a minimal fiscal impact and a minimal revenue impact. The measure also has a dash A3 amendment, which is available on OLIS and in your packets. The dash 3 amendment extends the same provisions to contracting with state agencies. The bill as currently written deals only with local contracting agencies.
Go ahead and introduce yourself and proceed.
For the record, I'm Diane Lancaster, the Chief Procurement Officer for the Oregon Department of Administrative Services. Chair Fagan, members of the committee, this bill is about confirming contractor compliance with the tax laws of the state and local political jurisdictions. The goal here is to remove and change the current requirement for an affidavit of compliance, which has to be notarized. The requirement has particularly affected small businesses who desire to submit bids and proposals. The dash A3 amendment would relieve the unintended consequences created with that requirement for signed affidavits, and this would bring in both state and local agencies into this relief. The amended version will set up the following process. First, bidders and proposers will submit signed attestations to the public contracting agency with their bid or proposal. Second, if they are successful, as a bidder or proposer and offered a contract by the public contracting agency, they will then sign a public contract that includes a couple of things. One is a representation and warranty that the new contractor has previously complied with all state and local tax laws. The second is a covenant from the contractor for continued compliance with the tax laws during the full term of the contract. Penalties are the third aspect of this work, and those penalties for noncompliance include default, termination, damages, and other relief as sought by any public agency. And with that, I'll ask for any questions that you might have, ma'am.
Okay. We'll hear from the whole panel first, and then we'll do questions.
Good afternoon, Chair Fagan and committee members. My name is Brian Smith, and I'm the purchasing manager for Multnomah County. And I'm here today to testify in support of SB 675, with the amendment being proposed by the state, which is aimed at making it easier for vendors to do business with public agencies. I hear all the time from vendors that it's difficult to work with public agencies, and as a public purchasing professional, I'm constantly challenging the processes that we set up as an agency to ensure we make it as easy and efficient as possible for vendors to do business with us while remaining legally compliant. This bill represents a minor change in the law which would make it easier for vendors to do business with public agencies. It would make legal compliance more efficient for public agencies by requiring bidders to attest to being up to date on their state and local taxes rather than requiring bidders to submit an affidavit saying as much. An affidavit requires the notarization, which is something we and other local governments do not require in the bidding process. This wrinkle is often unforeseen as potential vendors work to put their bids together and can result in potential vendors not getting their bids in on time. The bill before you simply changes the affidavit requirement to an attestation requirement and explicitly states that the contracting agency may terminate the public contract and seek damages and other relief. So we believe this change meets the same goals in a more efficient manner and is a better value for taxpayers. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today, and I'd be happy to address any questions you may have.
Chair Fagan, other members of the committee, for the record, Chris Fick with Multnomah County. Just by way of background, the affidavit requirement was inserted into legislation in 2014, so this is a fairly new requirement that public contracting agencies just became familiar with last year. We did work with the primary proponents of that legislation, Representative Holby and Representative Nathanson, on this fix, and do believe we have their approval and have strengthened the requirements around a false attestation at their request. It came out of the Senate 30-0, and we thank you very much for hearing this bill today.
Questions? No? Yes, would be good.
Well, I appreciate Mr. Pitt coming to me and working on fine-tuning that. I think it's good. I guess my question is really, I think this is great public policy as businesses, need to be on a level playing field with their competitors. And I guess my question really is for the Multnomah County is to, if this is good value to taxpayers, why would you not support this same mechanism in public contracting for construction?
Representative Fagan, or Chair Fagan, Representative Foley, I'm not sure I understand the difference.
Well, I don't believe this bill covers public contracting. Correct me if it does, or for construction, 279C.
No, this is 279B.
Correct. So you had previously testified against this same proposal including it in 279C. House Bill 2617 in this committee.
Chair Fagan, Representative Holvey, the requirement for that vendors be up to date on their taxes as a responsibility determination is something that I feel is that's a new requirement that came in with 4122 last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a great requirement. The issue that I had was the mechanism, and it's the difference between the affidavit and the attestation requirement. And fundamentally, the affidavit meant that this particular requirement for responsibility determination was treated differently than the others, and that was my concern. So both for the vendors who are trying to, who are seeking public work, as well as public agencies who have to set up processes to administer those. And it's much easier to for public agencies to set up systems that look at all of the responsibility determination requirements with kind of an equal footing in terms of from a process point of view. Does that make
sense? So it's about whether it's an attestation or an affidavit?
Yes.
So follow up? So I believe that the amendment for the public contracting bill that involved, that brought this also into construction also used attestation, not a statement, not an affidavit. So we can take this offline, I suppose, Madam Speaker. I'm glad you're supportive of this bill. I think it's a good bill. I was just concerned because your testimony isn't consistent with your last testimony on this same provision for public contracting under 279C.
Chair Fagan, Representative Holby, we'll be happy to continue this conversation offline. I thought, and I could be speaking about the wrong bill, that it had to do with subcontractors. Is my recollection incorrect that 2716 or 2617 had to do with generals enforcing subs? That was my...
But as far as the public contracting agency, it was directly with the general contractor. The provision also did extend through the general to subcontractors as well to ensure that same level of compliance on public contracts. But it was not the obligation of the public agency to seek out that attestation from the subcontractors. I'm just curious about the inconsistency, I guess, with your position.
We'd be happy to discuss that further and work with you on that.
Representative McLean.
Oh no, I thought I was having deja vu too, and so I was appreciative of your question, because it felt like the same scenario, the same story, the same, you know, players, and yet it was a different answer. So I'd appreciate knowing why that's not a good idea there too.
How broad is this relating to clause? Any further discussion? All right, seeing none.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard on Senate Bill 675A? Okay, seeing no one, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 675A. And is there anything else for the good of the order? Rayfield, do you want to maybe get in like a legal debate for an hour just so that so they can just enjoy,
yeah,
enjoy
I was,
that since
I was
we're leaving
upset
early?
That Mr. Brennan's daughters left because I wanted to open up an informational hearing on the Canby High School band.
Yes.
And take some testimony on that.
Colleagues, that's why he doesn't have the gavel.
Yeah, my father's retiring this year, so I thought it would be nice to get some fun information.
I thought you were going to say the Canby High fight's gone.
Yes.
They are. It's
no, that we don't have the time. We don't have awesome. The amount of time we need for that.
It may be appropriate to adjourn at this point.
So with that, I will. To do, I will decide when we adjourn with that, and I will decide to adjourn right now. With that, I will adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Effectiveness.